It's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you so much for having me and to the American Public Health Association. I'm just going to start off. I have no disclosures that are relevant to the presentation. Today I'm going to discuss a program I started in my hospital in New York City addressing the needs of antepartum patients. We're going to start things off with an overview of what and who antepartum patients are and some things to know about high-risk pregnancies in general. Then I'm going to introduce you to my setting and our demographics so you have a sense of our population. And then I'll get into the realities that antepartum women face during admission. Next, we'll discuss the toll that an antepartum admission can take and how we designed our program to target those concerns. And finally, we'll discuss the successes we've had and some conclusions to apply to other settings and populations. So I wanted to start off with some images of what our society typically expects pregnancy and pregnant women to look like, and then the very sad faces that I see on a daily basis, not nearly as glamorous as we expect. So who are these women that I'm going to be talking about today? When we talk about antepartum women, we're just using a fancy term for pregnant. Antepartum simply refers to before delivery. Women are generally admitted to the hospital due to one of these diagnoses, but they all share the prescription for partial or total bed rest and regular, if not continuous, fetal monitoring. That means that these women spend almost all day, every day, in bed, limited in position, mobility, and access to the outside world. When we talk about high-risk pregnancy, one of our main concerns is, of course, the health of the fetus. Low birth weight and preterm delivery are the leading causes of infant death and admission to the neonatal intensive care unit, or NICU. So in order to avoid early delivery and try to increase the likelihood that women can remain pregnant longer, doctors generally prescribe bed rest and admit women to the hospital for ongoing care and treatment, such as steroids, blood pressure medications, and tocolytics. In the last decade, we've seen a dramatic increase in the numbers of high-risk pregnancies, thanks in part to wider options in fertility treatments, and therefore an increase in premature deliveries by 20% to 517,000 in 2012. However, we know that despite these complications, 30 to 50% of women are staying pregnant longer and making it to term more often than ever before, thanks to our improving medical care. But this has left women stuck in limbo as pregnant prisoners in the hospital setting. They don't belong anywhere else, but they're making it to term. So, who are our patients? We are a large urban hospital in New York City, smack in the middle of some of the richest and poorest zip codes in the country. As a hospital, we see 7,000 deliveries a year and approximately 350 antepartum patients. Our average length of stay for antepartum women is just over 15 days, and we have 12 beds set aside exclusively to accommodate this population. Many patients travel throughout the tri-state area to Mount Sinai for our well-known high-risk medical team and our NICU. I should also mention that our hospital sees approximately 80 preterm losses, that is, fetal deaths, annually. Many of those losses stem from high-risk pregnancies and diagnoses. So, obviously, as social workers, we ask ourselves, what is the emotional toll that a high-risk diagnosis and a lengthy admission can take on women and families? Most of the effects we see are easy to imagine. Of course, it's very common for my patients to experience fear. This is related both to the uncertainty of the situation and, in some cases, related to choices in medical treatments. Many patients who experience preterm labor symptoms prior to infant viability at 23 weeks, are faced with a difficult decision between choosing uncertain medical intervention or termination. A complicated and tragic choice, we see patients struggle with decisions that have no right or clear answers. Of course, with all of our patients, we see increased depression and anxiety, social isolation, disruption to family dynamics and routines, especially with patients with older children at home, financial strains due to unemployment of the patient, physical pain due to loss of mobility, and a complete loss of control over their environment, schedule, and daily routine. Patients in the hospital, as you can imagine, are stripped of much of what makes them happy and much of what keeps them functioning. The effect of these symptoms on the pregnancy itself is not entirely understood. In addition, the effect of our treatment of these women is also unclear. Ongoing research in the medical field continues to suggest that bed rest has no proven ability to sustain pregnancy, and instead may expose women to numerous health concerns, such as DVTs and muscle loss, as well as the monumental social concerns we discussed earlier. In fact, recent medical researchers went so far as to call bed rest unethical. In a field full of fear related to lawsuits and overshadowed by profound patient anxiety, more research is clearly needed to determine whether bed rest, one of our oldest medical prescriptions, is at all valid in this day and age. However, despite all of the uncertainty in this area, we do have lots of evidence to suggest that exposure to stress and symptoms of depression in pregnant women have some clear links to both preterm delivery and infant well-being. Researchers have found that an increase in CRH, a hormone that indicates likelihood for early delivery, exists among women with high levels of stress and diagnosed depression. In addition, studies found that women are most vulnerable to the impact of this stress in the beginning of their pregnancy, not in the end, as was previously thought. That means that the old wives' tale that you could scare a 9-month pregnant woman into labor was in fact false. Women have greater defenses in place to avoid labor by 9 months than they do early on, and in fact are more sensitive to stress in their first and second trimesters. We also see that infant development, such as chronic health problems, neurobehavior, and temperament, are all linked to maternal mood and can be impacted by a diagnosis of depression during pregnancy. And of course, all symptoms of extreme stress or depression while pregnant can contribute to a higher risk of postpartum depression. So, we had our work cut out for us when we sat down to design this program. First and foremost, we wanted to make it more comfortable for our patients to be trapped in the hospital, regardless of income. We wanted to make them happier in the simplest of ways and to see the experience through their eyes to better understand and provide care. We started with the inspiration of one patient, an 18-year-old woman who I followed for 70 days on our unit. Seeing someone with virtually no visitors, no access to social media, limited interaction with friends and family, we quickly realized that some changes were urgently needed. Our program therefore consists of comprehensive daily social work services, massage, music, and pet therapy weekly, guided imagery and crochet programs, DVD players in each room, iPads at the bedside, and access to Skype and internet, all free of charge. We secured funding for many of these services and used volunteers to assist in aspects of the program where funding was limited. We involved both the nursing and medical teams heavily in the design, funding, and implementation of the program, and designed customized rounding schedules and procedures to address uniformity of care. In addition, we brought together social workers from the NICU and the bereavement programs to offer early and continuous social work follow-up. We bridged units and enhanced continuity across the board in this model, specifically for this targeted and unique population. Without a doubt, this program has met its goals in improving care to the women it serves. It's helped give a voice to feelings and stresses that were previously ignored. It's provided education and awareness about the effects of the admission and the realities of its impact on women and families. It's allowed patients to have complementary services to say yes and no to, giving them an option to exercise control over some aspect of their care. The opportunity to control any aspect of your care in the hospital is a rare privilege for a patient and helps to fulfill a basic human need we all share. Outside of doctors and nurses, patients can choose music, massage, meditation, or crocheting. They can plan an afternoon movie or Skype session and regain a missing piece of their independence. As a unit, we've seen improvement in our communication and dialogue with patients through this program and in their satisfaction with the environment. This program works because it helps restlessness, provides distraction and entertainment, and builds strong therapeutic relationships that help identify and support coping skills that are already in place. In addition, it's helped link patients to areas of support within and outside of the hospital and created more cohesive alliances between providers. In conclusion, this program has shown us that it is easily transferable to a large number of populations and settings. We all have patients who need physical relief and entertainment as much as they need intensive therapy, but we so often dismiss or overlook the connection between the two. Patients who feel physically better and have a comforting environment are easier to engage, to support, and to collaborate with. Of course, like most areas of social work, we're often limited by funding in the creation of any amenity program. However, we found that collaboration with the nursing and medical disciplines led to cost-sharing possibilities that had been previously unexplored. This partnership taught us more about the importance of a multidisciplinary approach to care and the true benefit to approaching program development from the patient perspective. Thank you all for your time today. I'm grateful for this opportunity to share my work and experience with these patients.